police forces in the UK. Since then, he's advised a range of companies, coaching others on the art of listening. He joins us now. Very good morning to you, Richard.
Good morning.
I call it the art of listening. Is it actually an art? And how then do we get good at it?
I think the first thing you have to do is identify what listening really is. There's lots of people that talk about active listening skills, paraphrasing, nodding your head, etc., keeping the person talking. But actually, that's not real listening. And what that is keeping the person talking. So you have to identify what are you listening for? What's your outcome? Why are we here today? You know, is it this program is designed to do a certain thing? So you'll ask questions to get me to answer those things. And also, I think, you know, what do you listen for? What words are you listening for? Effective listening is the identification, selection and interpretation of keywords that turn information into intelligence. So if I'm sitting here having a conversation, there's a bit of a chat like this, then it's just a chat. If I'm sitting here and I'm trying to learn something, then I've got to pick up information and turn that information into intelligence. I've got to be able to use it. And that's the big difference. And I think most people hear and they collect information, but they don't do anything with it.
So a very distinct difference for you between hearing, obviously, and active, as you say, listening.
I think what people describe as active listening is not listening at all. I mean, the idea that, you know, asking a question is not listening, it's asking a question. Paraphrasing is talking. Nodding your head is nodding your head. It's nothing to do with your ears. If I said to you now, teach me to listen, where would you start?
It's very difficult. Very difficult because a lot of people, you can tell when I'm talking to them, in their eyes, you can see that something's triggered in their head and they want it. So they're not even listening to you anymore. They're already formulating how. Do you get that when you're doing your hostage
Absolutely.
Stuff? So the hostage says something and you're suddenly triggered an amusing anecdote you want to tell them.
Well, not so much an amusing anecdote, but...
Maybe that's a good reason not to become a hostage negotiator and stick with stand-up comedy.
But what are you listening for? So if you're talking to someone in a desperate situation, a suicide situation, for instance, someone on a bridge like that, you've got to listen for the levers. So you're listening for something. I'm listening to see what can I learn from that person? What can I now understand about that person that A's put them in this position? And then secondly, what can I use that he tells me about their story that will enable me to get that person off the bridge?
Let's just talk a bit about some of your work as a hostage and a crisis negotiator. I know you've worked all over the world. You got the release of 3 UN workers in Afghanistan.
I know there was a team of people.
Exactly. You were also part of the team that got the peace activist Norman Kember out of Iraq. When we imagine hostage negotiations, we kind of think middle of the night, remote, outlying place somewhere in the middle of nowhere. It's freezing cold. You're talking on a megaphone to a terrorist. Is it in any way that kind of tense and perhaps even as exciting as we like to imagine it is?
I think it's tense, and exciting is probably the wrong word. I think tense is a better word. It's not usually in the middle of the jungle somewhere on a megaphone. No, I mean, it's down the end of a telephone, if you're lucky. And a lot of the time, of course, they won't engage with you by the end of a telephone anyway, so you have to use other methods to get your message across. So use the media, for instance.
But so it's one of those skills where every time you take another step, it's potentially fatal for people.
Yeah.
Have you made mistakes? Are there mistakes that you've learned from and things that you've learned along the way where you think actually doing that, I would do it differently? Or even just generally, we do hostage negotiation now so differently from the way we did it 10 years ago. Is it an evolving art?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you only need to look at the Iranian embassy siege in 1981.
It was 1980.
And you'll see a negotiator and an interpreter walk down the road. I mean, it's on TV. And they walk down the road and bang on the window with a broomstick and say, here's your cigarettes. Well, it just wouldn't happen today. I mean, you know, it's always evolving. And we're getting better. And as we get better, they get better. So it's you're constantly trying to find different ways to... You're always looking to find out what it is that they're looking to achieve. Because people don't take hostages not to achieve something. They're looking to achieve something, and our job is to find an alternative way to achieve it without killing them.
We often hear, though, on the news that organisations like IS do take hostages and don't want to talk. Do you feel that in every situation there is a possibility for leverage, that there is a way of listening and talking and dialogue?
You have to listen. You have to listen to why they're doing what they're doing. And it may not be that they're talking, but their actions themselves are telling you something. So you've got to listen. You've got to try to understand them. It's no point trying to impose your values on somebody. It doesn't work.
I was going to say,
you have to impose their values back on them. You have to work them out.
So you have to be a very neutral. I mean, most I know this because in my other job too, kind of listening is the first, you know, learning how to listen is the first lesson, really. Yeah. But what you have to be really careful to do is that you don't listen from a particular angle. You've got to be very neutral in that. And it's very difficult to do that sometimes.
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult, especially when you see people do things that you are absolutely against what you believe in. I mean, and you're standing there, this is crazy. You know, why are you doing that? But equally, you find people in desperate situations who have decided that to kill themselves is the only way out. And you're thinking, well, it's only money. But to them, it's not. And it's no good you imposing what you believe on them. You have to sit back and say, right, hang on a second. Why is this having that effect on that person? And how am I going to find an alternative for them that's to show that there's a better way than this? There's a better way than killing yourself.
But you have to do that now, increasingly, against a background of millions of people watching and listening via social media, because everything is so much more public. Does that change the way that we listen, the way we respond to each other? Because, of course, we're all now being judged in a much more public way than ever before.
I think it's, in the end, it's very personal. I mean, if I'm talking to you, then I'm talking to you. You know, I could be talking to millions of people out there listening to this programme, I don't know, but I'm talking to you. It becomes very personal. And I think as if you start to worry too much about how the world is seeing you in those situations, you'll never say a word. You know, you have to, you really have to be yourself, and you have to be, I have to build a relationship with you. I don't have to build a relationship with the world.
But would you find a certain listening technique that I've picked up, especially when you're in a long-term relationship with someone, especially when you're with a woman, I find if they have an issue, a technique is to mirror back what they've just said. So if a partner says, I feel very upset, I feel you never listen to me, and I'm really, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do, and then you mirror back, I think you're hormonal. She goes, no, you're not listening to me. Yeah. You're not listening to me. But is that a technique you use to mirror back what the person is saying?
What you're looking for is, so instead of asking a question or mirroring it back, I think what I would say is, like, I'm getting the impression. You can use expressions like, I get the impression, it sounds to me like. And you can guess at what you think the person's feeling. So it sounds to me like you're having a really hard time, or that I'm not paying you enough attention. So instead of just asking the question, you put forward a suggestion. And by putting forward a suggestion, the person has two alternatives. The first one is to agree with you, and if they agree with you, they tend to expand on it and tell you, yeah, you're right, and... And if you've got it wrong, they'll disagree with you, and if they disagree with you, they say, no, that's wrong, and then tell you. So either way, you find out. And that the real skill of listening is to interpret, is the interpretation, is to find out what they really mean by what they're saying. People talk emotionally, and often when people come at us with an emotional complaint, we deal with it by coming back with facts. And actually what you should do is deal with the emotion first and then go into the facts.
Do you find, Richard, that you're often in a situation where you might be talking to someone who's threatening suicide, is that for them that's the first time that that's ever happened to them? They're overwhelmed by that experience. Absolutely. Whereas for you, it's something you've been through before, so you bring experience to that negotiation, if I can call it that way.
The difficulty with all of these things, whenever you're dealing with anybody, is it's one-to-one, and every situation is different. I mean, if you're talking to somebody who's, you know, just lost their husband, the impact of that can be very different to the next person who you talk to. Yeah. You know, it can be a very... And therefore, to kind of go in there with any preconceived idea about how this is going to work would be wrong. All you're doing is you're saying, OK, what's the situation I'm dealing with now? This is why when you see people talk about hostage situations on TV and people say, well, what do you think of the situation? I've got no idea. I'm not talking to that person on the other end of that phone. I'm not dealing with that person in that way. I don't know what the external pressures are. So for anyone to sit and say, well, they'll be doing this or they'll be doing that, it's just nonsense, because unless you're actually involved in that situation, you know, you don't know what the influences are going on. So that's why.
Interesting that from all of your experiences, you've taken listening as the thing that bonds all of these situations, absolutely, whether it's a job interview, whether it's talking to your boss, talking to your spouse, whether it's a hostage negotiation. I mean, in the news today, this new army brigade that's being formed, 77 Brigade, to engage in warfare in a new way, to engage with social media and influencing people with soft power. It seems that perhaps this is a very nascent art, the art of listening, and something that it's not just about hostage negotiations. We all need to do it better every day, and it would make our lives easier.
It's all about them, it's not about you. I mean, and this is the key about listening is understand why they're doing what they're doing and stop trying to be clever and solve problems. You know, and why do they need to do this? Why are they behaving in this way? And it's all about the other person. And I think it's interesting for me because I think I was brought up in a period where we listened to the radio. And so we got used to listening. And I think, you know, from up until the age of 12, we didn't have a TV in the house. So, and I think we've become a much more visual society. And therefore, I think people are used to seeing pictures and being... And so they've lost this art of listening. Yeah. And yet the key is listening. People talk about body language, and I'm not a great lover of body language. Unless you know me really well, you can't tell my body language. You know, whereas my words are all subconscious. And if they're subconscious, it means I'm giving away secrets. So if I can keep you talking, you'll give away secrets, provided I listen for them.
I think that's the thing in society. We've lost that sense of empathy, that of really feeling what other people are feeling. Mm. And it's not just listening, it's about interpreting. Mm. So I can imagine people around the country like saying, what I'm hearing is that you have money problems. What I'm hearing is that you want to kill yourself. What I'm feeling that you have emotional... But what I'm sensing is you're an idiot, you need to grow a pair. Get with it. What's the matter with you? You
know, but it is empathy, feel. Yeah. And that may be how you feel.
Yeah, but
and
you that's can't
it,
do
but
that.
You
yeah.
can't say that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, what you said before around embarrassment, and that other countries don't have embarrassment. In fact, what they have is saving face, which is another form of embarrassment. So it's dignity. Embarrassment, it really is dignity. So when you talk about in Arab culture, you know, there's all a big thing about saving face. You can't be seen to be a coward. Well, yeah. That's embarrassment.
And
I don't think we should kind of drop the line between those two.
Richard Mulliner.
Someone's tweeted, this kind of draws thrones. How do you listen to a teenager when they barely talk but communicate in grunts? Just wondered, us.
I think you just, again, you have to ask yourself is what are they grunting about? So often when we're talking to teenagers, we're trying to put old head on young shoulders. And the reality is their world has moved. They're in a different world to what we were in. You know, there's no point. And if you don't listen to what they're saying and what their concerns are. I was having a conversation recently with some people and they talked about Facebook. And the person said, well, and they were talking about bullying on Facebook. And the person said, well, just go off it. Just sign yourself off it. And the young person there said, no, you can't. You can't sign yourself off Facebook because that's how we talk now. And that's really important to people. And it was really the big difference between the two age groups was that this is where they're at now. So if you're talking to a teenager, you've got to talk to them where they're at now. I had a chap up a tree, 45 minutes, never said a word. And then you have to find out, and you're talking, you've got to talk for 45 minutes. And I was talking about all sorts of stuff. In the end, a squirrel ran past him, so I said, goodness me, look, you've made Squirrel Nutkin, you know, look, you've made him homeless, this is dreadful, cha-cha-cha-cha. And in the end, because the closer I got to the tree, the higher he went, the higher he goes, the thinner the branches. So it became more and more dangerous the closer I got. In the end, I said, it's obvious you're dead, you know, because you haven't spoken for 45 minutes, you must be dead, I'll go and get a ladder. At which point he started talking, and gradually we increased the conversation. And at that point he said, you know that thing about the squirrels? I said, yeah. He said, made me laugh. And it was that moment where you suddenly realise, and the learning in this is if you've got a child in a bathroom who won't come out for whatever reason, just remember they're listening to everything you say.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Just remember they pick up everything. So they may not be responding to you, but they are listening and they are hearing.
Yeah, I think I've discovered, I think, in pastoral ministry, is just how many people feel intense frustration at not being heard. Oh. Because they're not people who would push themselves forward. They're not people with a loud voice. They're not people who are used to doing that and find themselves a sort of muteness forced upon them in a noisy culture like ours.
There's also a big thing about asking questions. We're taught as children everything else, ask questions, ask questions, ask questions. The default position should be shut up, don't ask questions. Every time you ask a question, you change the subject. If I say to you, I'm going
hard words to hear for broadcasters on live radio shows.
But of course, you're aiming to ask a question to push me in a certain direction.
Yeah.
If you're listening to somebody and they're trying to tell you something, the moment you ask a question, you're asking something about what you want to know, not what they want to tell you.
Yeah.
And the difference is, so if you can just hold back on the questions.
Yeah.
And just listen to what they've got to say and don't change the subject.
It's funny that we're having this conversation, we're hoping it's flowing quite naturally because we've got people in our ears saying, move on,
yeah.
time. Because we've got these time constraints, yeah. the unforgiving minute. We've got to get yeah. you to say what we want you to say within the minute budget we've got to do it. It's a completely
yeah.
different conversation for the kind of conversation you'd have pastorally or in your work.
Yeah, well, even in our work, I mean, there's a situation where you've got someone on a bridge or in a dangerous position. You want to get them to safety. So that's the trouble. So there is a time constraint in a way, but it's not necessarily time, but it's this... Oh, my word, I've got to get them safe. So
we get this sometimes from listeners who say, why do you interrupt all the time? Well, actually, the job of a presenter is to interrupt.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you've just got to get people to the place they've got to be.
Well, yeah. Why don't I do that right now by telling you that Wendy Morgan-John has just pointed out the word listen contains the same letters as the word silent. Very nicely put, thank you. Mm.